The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Back on Get Up, and with the rain postponing these elimination games yesterday, we'll have them for you today on ESPN and the ESPN app. James Madison taking on number one seed Oklahoma at 4 Eastern. Then Florida State squares off against Alabama with a spot in the championship finals on the line. And that's today on ESPN. And you can watch all the action on the ESPN app, which is where you find us every single morning. I'm Greeny and delighted you've chosen to get up with us today. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. We come to you, as always, live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. And could we be busier? The answer is no. Here comes the menu for hour number two. We're getting up with a superstar Sunday. The names and the numbers that dominated. And a game seven that decided it all. Then the deal is done. The addition of this star receiver doesn't mean we will remember these Titans come January. We're talking about it. And then this is the week we've been waiting for in Green Bay. Does Aaron Rodgers finally show his hand, or does he get shown the door? We'll answer all those questions and more in this hour of Get Up With. Starts with this. Game of the day, Game 7 Mavericks Clippers. Can a home team finally win? Well, not if that guy has anything to say about it. Luka Doncic, you can't be better than he was in this series. First quarter, they're rotating defenders on him, and they can't stop him. That was Nicholas Batum. This is Rajon Rondo. And then more of the same from Terrence Mann in the second quarter. Luka at 29 points at halftime, but the Mavs were down 70-62. Third quarter, we're tied at 81. And Kawhi Leonard, who was spectacular in Game 6, would not let it get away from the Clippers this time. There's two of his 28. Clippers take the lead. Next possession for LA. Clippers swinging it around. Ball will eventually find Marcus Morris. And Morris made big shots in this game. He had 7 threes. A few minutes later, Clippers still up by 5. And again, it's Kawhi. And again, it winds up in the hands of Morris. Clippers finish the third on a 24-4 run to take a commanding lead. And they're feeling it. In LA, look at Steve Ballmer. He loves it. Luka, not so much. 2 minutes to go. Mavs down 10. Doncic, not giving up. He averaged 35-10 for the series. 46 points yesterday, second most ever in a Game 7, but there was too much for the Clippers. That's Reggie Jackson. Clippers made 20 threes. Kawhi, 28-10. Clippers win it 126-111. They advance to face Utah in the next round. And our friends at Caesars Sportsbook see the Jazz as slight favorites. They're currently minus 145. Our analytics, however, love Utah, giving the Jazz a 70% chance of making it to the Western Finals. Earlier, we go from Game 7 to Game 1 in the East, and Joel Embiid was back in the lineup, and he was better than ever with that torn meniscus. Sixers hosting the Hawks, but this was the Trae Young show in the first half. Look at him here, crossing up Danny Green, knocking down the three. We're in the second quarter. The Hawks are up by 20, and it's more from Trae Young. You can't give him any room. He makes you pay. Pumped up is Trae Young, under 40 seconds to go in the half. Hawks are up by 18. And one more time, it is Trae Young. He had 35-10. And Doc Rivers thinking to himself, I can't believe what we're seeing out here. But hold on, Sixers would not go away. Buck 15 to go in the ballgame. They're only down 7, and it's Joel Embiid. Talk about bully ball. Watch this here. There's no good matchup for that. He takes out two men with one play. Sixers within 5. Next possession, Embiid again. Wants the foul, doesn't get it, but he gets the bucket. He had 39. It's a three-point game. Under 15 seconds to go. Hawks are up by 4. They need a steal. Oh, they get a steal. Here comes Ben Simmons, uncontested. Two-point game, 10 seconds left. They need another turnover. Can they force it? No, they can't. Hawks get it in. They make their foul shots. And ultimately, they do hold on and win. 128-124. They take game one on the road despite 39 from Embiid. Trae Young and the Hawks stealing home court advantage. And so as I bring Tim Legler into the conversation here, you know, the Sixers got what they wanted. They got Embiid back. He played great. Are the Hawks now, in your mind, the team to beat in this series? Are they? Do you give them the advantage right now?
I don't know that I would go that far, but I will say I think it's a significant wake-up call for Philadelphia. I don't think Philadelphia thought that they were going to have to make the type of adjustments that they're going to have to make now going forward, because they've got such great defensive perimeter personnel. And when you go up against a Trae Young, it's going to take that. You need guys that have lateral speed. They've got to have length because of the distances that he's covering. You've got to have guys that have some relentlessness. And they've got three of them that are pretty good in that category. Ben Simmons, Matisse Thybulle, Danny Green, all three. So I think Doc Rivers coming into this was probably very focused on you getting Embiid back, making sure their offense is going to run smoothly. And for the most part, it did. He looked sensational. But the other end of the floor was an absolute nightmare for them in the first half. Trae Young came out, got into a rhythm. He didn't get touched very much. He was able to go where he wanted to with the basketball. I don't think they were as prepared and their senses heightened enough for what they were going to deal with. This guy can dismantle defenses, and that's what he did, and he got into a rhythm early. Now they've got to make serious adjustments with how they prioritize Trae Young at the start of game two. So I don't know that I'd say Atlanta now is the favorite to win this series, but I think it certainly shows you this is going to be a long, hard fight for Philly.
All right, well, ultimately the winner will get the winner of Bucks-Nets. Brooklyn will go without James Harden tonight. Let me ask you the question this way. If Harden is not able, because of the hamstring, to be a significant factor in the series, who wins?
I still think the Nets win the series, but I think now you're looking, you know, eye to eye. Now it's more of a toss-up, and the Nets just have a game in hand. That's why I would probably favor them going forward. Because you have Kevin Durant, you have Kyrie Irving. So the offensive dynamic is going to change if James Harden's not out there, because now Kyrie Irving is going to be the main plate setter. And that's not the way they've been playing, so that's going to be different. But I just have so much faith in the greatness of Kevin Durant, and I think he's got an answer for whatever you throw at him. He's done it throughout his career. The question is, you know, can he now dial it to a place where we saw him in Oklahoma City, where we saw him in Golden State at his best? It's been a while since we've seen that Kevin Durant. And as efficient as he's been in this team, we haven't seen him have to put him on his back and get them through tough moments. Let's see if he can do that. I believe he can, and I still think Milwaukee is going to have some problems in one-possession games with how they're going to get offense at critical times, you know, based on who they go to, because I think it's going to be Middleton or Holiday. I'm not sure they're still not married to Giannis in those situations, and I think that could be problematic for them. So I still think the Nets are in good shape, even without Harden.
Imagine being able to overcome the loss of James Harden and still be the favorite to win a playoff series. Timmy Legs, outstanding. We'll talk to you as the week goes on. But the huge news came yesterday, not just from the NBA, but also from the NFL. Our Diana Russini reported the Falcons were expected to trade Julio Jones to the Titans. And then a few hours later, the deal was done. Tennessee sending a second rounder in 22 and a fourth rounder in 23 for Julio and a sixth round pick. And what does Vegas think of the deal? Well, I'm glad you asked. After they acquired Julio, the Titans' odds at Caesars Sportsbook jumped dramatically from 35-1 to 30-1. So Vegas likes the deal. A.J. Brown likes the deal, saying, quote, having another dominant guy on the other side, everybody has to be honest. Now you don't know who's going to hold who. I may get CB1 or Julio may get CB1, but whoever gets CB2 is going to be in trouble. It's going to be fun. And it's always fun when we can bring Ryan Clark into the conversation. He joins the party here this morning. And so, R.C., you know, the old expression, like, who do you send off the bus first? That's like an old high school football thing, like the biggest, most imposing-looking guy. Well, they got A.J. Brown. They got Julio Jones. They got Derrick Henry. They got the most imposing-looking bus in the history of football. Yeah. What are these Titans now?
Well, they got the most imposing-looking offensive bus. Let's not forget that they can't stop people yet. But when you think about what this team can do from an offensive standpoint, one, they absolutely scare you physically, right? If you're a DB, if you're a safety, if you're a nickelback, and you understand the type of physicality that you'll be facing from this offense, you already know that Friday is going to have to be no shirt Friday, and you're going to have to get the curls for the girls and get some triceps done so you can see yourself look swole in the mirror just so you walk into the stadium with some confidence. But then it comes the actual play on the field. Like, who do you double? Where do you send the safety to? How many people do you have in the box to stop Derrick Henry? You thought this team was prolific and Ryan Tannehill was prolific in play action pass before. This just takes it to another level. This will be a team that will be difficult to scheme, but impossible to truly stop. And this is a huge move, but is this team a receiver away from a Super Bowl? I'm just not sure.
Well, so let's analyze that a little more, Teddy. Now you're going out there. You break the huddle and you're walking out and you're looking and they've got Derrick Henry behind the quarterback and they have those two guys on the outside. What are you thinking as you're walking up to the line of scrimmage?
You want to get off the field as quick as possible. I'll tell you that because in terms of tackling, that's what your coach is going to stress all week is tackling because those are three of the toughest tackles in the league. I mean, A.J. Brown is one of the toughest receivers in the league to tackle, period. And then Derrick Henry, you add another physical beast in Julio Jones. And off of what R.C. said, this defense, as much as you think that it's the weak link, this makes them better in terms of if Julio is able to make an explosive play or two to keep the chains moving. I mean, that time of possession is a weapon that the Tennessee Titans know they have to have in their back pocket in terms of keeping that subpar defense off the field. So a defense now realizes, okay, we just got to make one or two plays again, get us a couple turnovers and get it back to our offense because they're eating up the clock. That's how this team can be successful and compete to be one of the upper echelon teams in the AFC, but it has to be complementary. That defense, they can't be stopping people on the field all day long. And the offense, three and outs, that's as bad as it gets for them. So eating up the time of possession, and that's how the defense will succeed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nick, I mean, you know how it is. And people will look at the name. Julio Jones is a much bigger name than Corey Davis is, and rightly so. Over the course of his career, he's been unbelievable. So they will look at this, and they will say, the Titans are now a legit Super Bowl contender. When they say that, Dominique, what will you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to go back to Ryan's point. They brought in Bud Dupree, who I think is a decent pass rusher, but it doesn't change their pass rush, and they're going to be relying on Caleb Farrelly, who has a really ugly injury history and is a rookie this year, to be a true number one corner across from Janoris Jenkins, who is as good as any corner in the league when he's playing well, but is also a problem at times. So I think that would be where my concern is. And if I'm walking up to the line of scrimmage on first downs from a defensive perspective, what I'm going to say is to guys like Teddy is y'all gonna have to stop the run with six because I'm going to need both of these safeties over right. top of these here receivers. So I'm sorry, Mr. Brewski. It's going to be a long day for you in the box, but 6 yards, 7 yards, 10 yards is a lot different than 60 or 50. So I'm going to need you to bow up a little bit, do them extra curls on Friday, put some Vaseline on, hold your breath so you look
yes,
good,
sir.
And yeah, take care of business in the box.
Get a horse collar.
I need RC. I need RC over me. I don't need RC down there with you.
That conversation continues. It's like, but wait a second. How about Derrick Henry? We got this beast back there in the backfield. I need right. that safety. I need the eighth player. So there's a big discussion on Wednesdays about who gets the help.
I mean, you like 250, and so is A.J. Brown. So why don't you come out there and cover him then? I'll get in the box and deal right. with Derrick Henry.
I see you're the safety.
You
where do you want to be?
Stiff arm? I don't want this stiff arm by myself. Wait. Derrick Henry, shoot, come up here. Strong hey. Safety.
Hey, Greeny, I want to be wherever the guys need me because in truth, I got the easy job. If I slide down into the box, I'm the unblocked guy, and they ain't going to never put me one-on-one with AJ or Julio, so I'm only providing help. And what I do know as well is if we do get bombed on, I know how to peel off and have Dominique being the only guy chasing him on the screen and not myself. And then when I run over to Dom, I'm going to point at him like he's the one that's wrong, but I'm going to be apologizing. My bad, Dom. I was supposed to be over the top. I was supposed
move.
To have you.
Bet
that's
move.
On me. That's a bad move. Everybody's going to be like, well, obviously. And then Greeny, you're going to come on Monday morning. Here's Ryan Clark fussing at Dominique Foxworth, even though he has 7 degrees, he must not be smart enough to cover Julio Jones.
And then when I go out to the game, I'll be like, I don't know. I don't tell people what the defense is.
This right here, this is a legit defensive meeting right here. This is what
we all got to do better. At the post-game press conference, man, we all got to do better. That's it.
We got to do better.
I need to figure out if anyone really wants to be the unblocked guy when Derrick Henry has the ball. We'll talk about that as we continue here. In the meantime, much more in this defensive meeting. How are you guys going to handle Aaron Rodgers holding out? The Packers have sent him a very public message. How will he respond? We'll get to that. And we'll get to this. Which quarterback will make the Josh Allen jump this season? All that and more as we get up with you on ESPN.
Let me first show.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
All right, we're back, and tomorrow is a very significant day in the development of the Aaron Rodgers saga. It's the first of 3 consecutive Packers mandatory minicamp days. No one's expecting Rodgers to be there. In his monthly column, Packers president Mark Murphy wrote this, quote, "The situation we face with Aaron Rodgers has divided our fan base. The emails and letters that I've received reflect this fact. As I wrote here last month, we remain committed to resolving things with Aaron, want him to be our quarterback in 2021 and beyond. We are working to resolve the situation and realize the less both sides say publicly, the better." He said that in the very public forum of his monthly newsletter, or excuse me, his monthly column that he writes. And Dominique Foxworth, just to start with you here as we bring Ryan Clark into the conversation for the first time this morning. You're questioning whether or not the fans really are divided on all of this.
I mean, I don't know that there are any fans that are divided on this. I think all the fans have decided that they want Aaron Rodgers because they aren't stupid. There's no division here. Like, to me, it feels like Mark Murphy is setting up this straw man to kind of accuse Aaron Rodgers of being divisive. And being divisive is never a compliment. No one ever says, "I love that guy or that woman," because they're so divisive. Like, he is making this out as if Aaron Rodgers is the problem and kind of obscuring the fact that he was a part of the organization that drafted a guy that wasn't even good enough to be the backup quarterback last year. And the result of that is upsetting your Hall of Fame, future Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champ, MVP quarterback. So you got to wear this and stop trying to pawn it off on someone else. And Jeff Darlington sent me a screenshot that really made this all come into fruition or become quite clear to me that Aaron Rodgers is not the villain in all of this.
So what do you think, RC? We haven't had a chance to get your take on this. What do you make of the whole deal?
I mean, I think that there are some fans that are divided, right? There are going to be some fans that are just Green Bay Packer fans, and they love Brett Favre, too, and they love the Green Bay Packers, and they think that everything they've done since Lombardi is the right thing. But most of the fans are going to be on Aaron Rodgers' side because you love who you love. And more than anything, you know that Aaron Rodgers has done more on the grass than Brian Gutekunst, than Mark Murphy, than all of those people. You know that Aaron Rodgers is going to do more on the grass right now. But you want to say he's divisive. You see, he didn't say he's divided the locker room, right? Because dividing the locker room is a real thing. You can lie about dividing the fans. He's not going to take a freaking poll in his column. He's just going to say these things, hope that people accept him, and expect us to talk about those things on Get Up. But the truth is this. People love the players. There's never been a spot, maybe Pittsburgh, that understands that loving our owners more than loving the entire organization or loving players on the organization works, because our owners have been there throughout decades and decades of winning. That's not the way that it works everywhere else, especially not in Green Bay. So most fans buy 12 jerseys. They don't read Mark Murphy's column. And why in the hell is Mark Murphy writing a column every month? Stop drafting quarterbacks who ain't gonna play.
That's a very funny point. Teddy Bruschi, you said earlier, that this is where the finger pointing begins. Where does it go from there?
Yeah, guys, let the blame game begin, and let the upper management of Gutekunst and Company let everyone realize that we are trying to get Aaron Rodgers back. This was not our decision. It's Aaron's decision. He's the one that wants out. This will come out in little pieces from the upper management or sources over and over again, so it makes them look good. because that's where the division is talking is he's talking about. People either blame them or they'll blame Aaron Rodgers. I'm sure there are some 60-year-old men out there that have been Packers fans since they were three since birth that will live and die Green Bay Packers, and they're blaming Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. Like, why did Rodgers do this to us? But the majority is going to be, what the heck did you draft that quarterback for anyway? Because we had Aaron Rodgers, and that monkey wrench he talks about winning that MVP, and now everyone's either blaming Gutekunst in the upper management or Rodgers, and that's where the division is going to happen. But that blame game, they know how to put it out there that we're just trying our best. We want Aaron here. But I'm telling you, drafting a guy in the first round didn't give Aaron that message.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, by the way, you know, this doesn't exactly feel like a Wally Pipps situation either, where like Aaron Rodgers has to be nervous going into training camp. If he lets Jordan Love all of a sudden get some reps, people are going to say, you know what? Maybe we're better with Jordan Love. So that is probably a real moving point, though, when it comes to the finability of Aaron Rodgers. The cost starts to get real. If he misses a veteran minicamp, a mandatory minicamp, it's a $93,000 fine. I think you move on from that for the point that you're making here. Once you get to training camp, the new CBA says that teams are required to fine players $50,000 a day, and that's not forgivable later. So 10 practices is $500,000. So that's when it'll start to get real from a monetary standpoint, but for Aaron Rodgers, not necessarily real from a Jordan Love's going to come in and suddenly everybody's going to forget about me. That ain't happening.
And RC, you made an interesting point. You said that this hasn't divided the locker room, or at least he didn't say that. Could it do that, though? I mean, at some point, is that the biggest fear that you have, that at some point this does trickle down and the players are getting pulled apart?
Absolutely, but the players aren't going to get pulled apart, right? There's not going to be players fighting for the Green Bay Packers and then players fighting for Aaron Rodgers. What it seems is that the players are going to be fighting for Aaron Rodgers or are going to be on Aaron Rodgers' side. Jordan Love is in the worst position in football. There's nothing that he can do to beat Aaron Rodgers short of winning a Super Bowl. And I don't think they win a Super Bowl without Aaron Rodgers at the quarterback. And so if there is a bad game, if the passing game isn't good, if there's a game where there's a ton of turnovers and you are used to having a dude that for the last few years threw 99 touchdowns and only 11 interceptions, there's going to be an issue. If I'm Devontae Adams and I can't get the rock, if I'm Devontae Adams and my stats are trickling down on a one-year deal, then I have an issue. I think that's going to be more of the problem, and all of that will point to Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst. I don't think there's players that will sit at home and say to themselves, Aaron did us bad. It's going to be, why did the Green Bay Packers make the moves that they did to make Aaron Rodgers sit at home?
But I have to leave it there, even though I would love to continue this conversation for about the next 7.5 hours. In the meantime, I'll take a very short break, and we will do much more on this as we go. And we'll talk about another quarterback. Josh Allen went from good to great in 2020. Which quarterback makes that jump in 2021? That's the question. We'll have the answer. And then, how long are the Nets going to be without James Harden? Malika Andrews covers the team. She joins us live with the latest next.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's time for Ryan Clark to explain his tweet.
Get in the gym, bro. Well, I just got buffalo chicken dip. Baker.
Bruh. Lord.
As everyone laughs at the way I read your tweet.
I can't even do it with a straight face.
Been too long since we've done this. Ryan Clark is the best follow on Twitter. And here we go explaining his tweets from the weekend. And it starts with this. Welp, A.J. Brown was part of the swolest wide receiver duo in college history, and now with Julio
joining to form Voltron in Tennessee. The beat goes on. Healthy, hungry Hall of Fame Julio pulls up in Nashville, and defenses finna have a problem. Henry Brown Jones, physical freakiness overload. RC, explain that tweet.
Hey, man, as you were reading that, man, Rick James is playing in my head super freak, but not in the way that Rick meant it, in a whole different way, in a way where we're going to argue about who's going to get off the bus first, and they're just going to get an extra big door and let Julio and Derek and AJ walk off all together in suede pants with no shirts on, because these dudes are going to be physical. They're going to get the ball, run after the catch on the outside, and you still have to stop Derek Henry. The Tennessee Titans have built Voltron on offense, and this is going to give Ryan Tannehill an opportunity to be the MVP of the league.
See, that's the beauty of RC's tweets. They are both entertaining and insightful. Sometimes they raise interesting questions like this. With the rookie pay scale being what it is in today's NFL, how far into a rookie contract should teams wait to decide whether their young QB is the dude? RC, explain the tweet.
Well, listen, like, look at some of these young quarterbacks we've had, right? If you think about the Chicago Bears and Mitchell Trubisky, they probably waited a year too long. Sam Darnold is out at the New York Jets. We're already hearing that Tua Tagovailoa has to prove this year that he's the guy. So how long do we wait, right? We know Josh Allen is the dude right now. You know that Justin Herbert is the dude right now because he started out early in his rookie season. But there's so many different times when you're trying to figure out, can this guy be our franchise quarterback? And if I'm a head coach, how long am I willing to wait? We're seeing now more than ever, it's getting shorter and shorter that these guys have an opportunity to prove themselves. So young quarterbacks, you better get it, and you better get it fast.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thought. And that brings us to one of those young quarterbacks, Josh Allen, of course, who had a tremendous season. Ryan tweeting, any quarterback taking the Josh Allen jump this year? RC, explain the tweet.
Like, look at Josh Allen, right? We looked at Josh Allen when he came into the league, a strong arm, athletic guy, had some accuracy issues. And even in his second year, he was good, but he wasn't great. And he certainly didn't seem to be on the trajectory he ended up being in last year. But now that's what we're seeing, right? We're seeing that guys can make a jump. Guys can hit a splash. Well, who's that dude this year? Which one of these young quarterbacks that we're waiting on? And hell, it could be an old quarterback like Matt Stafford. What dude says, you know what, I've been good forever, I've had this talent, or I've always been able to do it, and this year, watch me do it big. That's the quarterback I'm looking for, and that quarterback makes a jump in the MVP race, but I think his team makes a jump to the playoffs.
Okay, and so that makes it worth asking everyone what they think. It's the second time in a week, RC, you tweeted a question, and we just turned it into a segment because we like to hear. So I will start with you, since it was your idea.
The power of RC.
Who would you pick? Which quarterback do you think makes that jump in 21? Ryan.
You know what? I'm going to go with Kyler Murray. And I was huge on Kyler Murray early on last season. He kind of got banged up. The wheels were down. And you saw that once his athleticism was gone, he didn't really work the ball down the field like he wanted it to. I know they had A.J. Green on the outside, but it's going to be about D-Hop. It's going to be about what Christian Kirk can do. It's also going to be about Cliff Kingsbury. How do you scheme up on-time plays for Kyler Murray to get the ball out of his hands where it doesn't matter how athletic he is and what his legs can do? If you get those things from Cliff Kingsbury, I think we see Kyler Murray in some of these MVP conversations.
I like it. Teddy, what do you like?
Let's go with Justin Herbert of the Los Angeles Chargers. I like to see if these young quarterbacks have the right mentality to be successful in to win championships and how they fix their mistakes. I mean, speaking of mentality, not only is he run over linebackers on the sideline, but by the way, you get your first start, or you hit the field when the starter gets a punctured lung right before the game and just go out there, kid.
Man.
And then he still balls out.
That's
He's learned
crazy.
From his mistakes, not so much an error repeater. This is a guy right here. He can take that jump RC is talking about, I think. Just watch him get better and better over the course of the year.
All right, like that one too. Dominique, how about you?
I got nobody. Like, I'm confused at what you guys are talking about. This Josh Allen league. Like, Josh Allen is, Ryan, you talked about super freaks. Josh Allen was a super freak in a bad way. He was the kind that you don't take home to mother for the first two seasons of his career, where he was putting up QBRs of 40. Like, that was gross. That was like bottom three in the league stuff. And then this year, he has a QBR in the 80s, which nobody else did that except for Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. So, no, nobody is making the Josh Allen leap because we're not even sure if Josh Allen can continue that type of leap. To go from worst in the league to top in the league, and y'all talking about that he'll never let your spirits down once you get him off the street?
I was about to say, he'll never let your spirits down.
Nick is measuring leaps. We're measuring leaps now. Different leaps.
I'm measuring leaps. You can't call it a Josh Allen leap because Herbert was good last year. Kyler Murray was good last year. They're not going to go from adding 40 points to their QBR. That I don't even know if that's possible. That puts you outside of the range of mathematics.
Dominic, you know what you just did? You just sampled the question and turned it into you can't touch this, which is what MC Hammer did with
right.
that song
well done.
Many years
well
ago.
Well done, Mike.
In the meantime, I'm going to take Sam Darnold because things can't possibly be worse for that's Sam Darnold. He goes from being in the worst situation any young quarterback could possibly be in to what I think is inarguably a better one and maybe even a good one. And if he is the talented player that I believe he is and a lot of people in the NFL believe he is, I think he could take a major jump from being as bad, looking as bad as any quarterback in the entire NFL to looking a whole lot better.
Not a Josh Allen jump, though.
Those are our picks. That could be a Josh, at least in distance, it could be a Josh Allen jump, even if he doesn't become a top five player. Okay, let me run the floor. I got NBA stuff, and I got Malika ready to go here. We run the floor with yesterday's action. Game 7, we open the hour with this. Mavs, Clippers, Luka Doncic was spectacular. 46 points, 14 assists, but not enough. Kawhi Leonard, an assist shy of a triple-double. L.A. pulled away at the end to win 126-111, so they will play the Jazz. That series starts tomorrow night. In Philly, Trae Young had 35 points. Hawks held on to beat the Sixers by 4 in Game 1 of that series. Atlanta nearly blowing a 25-point third-quarter lead. Joel Embiid played with a torn meniscus, had 39 for the Sixers, so he looked great. Meanwhile, speaking of playing without, James Harden will miss tonight's Game 2 against Milwaukee with what is described as right hamstring tightness. He got hurt in the first minute of the Nets' victory on Saturday night. Remember, he missed over a month with a hamstring strain during the regular season. And no one knows this team better than our Malika Andrews, who gets up with us early here this morning. Malika, thanks. What is the expectation internally for the Nets as far as what they can expect to get from Harden in this series?
Well, good morning, Greeny. That remains to be seen, right? So what the expectation is over the next couple of days, they're going to continue to monitor James Harden's hamstring. You mentioned that, remember, he missed over a month in the regular season, 18 games with a right hamstring strain. But before that, Greeny, he missed 2 games with right hamstring, you guessed it, tightness. So then he came back, he played just 5 minutes against the New York Knicks, and that's when he strained that hamstring. So they're going to be very cautious with him here. Steve Nash did say yesterday, you know, now is the time to take risks. It is the playoffs. We need our best players out there. But they also need to be balancing protecting James Harden from himself. This is someone, a guy who wants to be out there, prepared to be out there, wants to be with his team. So it's going to be a little bit of a balance. They want him to play, but they need to see how his hamstring responds
first. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously the biggest question here. I asked Tim Legler at the start of the hour, if they don't get anything from Harden, will they still win the series? And he said yes, but it becomes sort of an equal matchup. What are you hearing from inside about how they will overcome whatever it is they don't get from him?
Well, it's going to need to be the other guys, right, Greeny? And let's be very clear. James Harden is not a replaceable player, but let's look back at the blueprint of what it took to win Game 1. They needed Blake Griffin to have his first playoff double-double since 2016 when he was with the Clippers. Mike James, Steve Nash readily said after the game, you know, we didn't go into this matchup thinking Mike James was going to play over 30 minutes and have the impact he did. Joe Harris had 5 three-pointers and the Bucks had just 6 as a team, right? So that's the kind of performance they're going to need from other scorers in order to come out on top in this series. And they're also defensively looking to really buckle down. They like the way they play there in Game 1. They're going to need to build on that in Game 2 because the expectation is the Bucks are not going to have the same kind of poor shooting night, Greeny.
Outstanding, as always. Malika Andrews, we'll look for your coverage tonight, Game 2 of that series. Thank you for getting up early with us here. And we'll mention that our playoff coverage will continue on Thursday. That's the next night for us on ESPN. We will have Game 3 in the showdown between the Nets and Bucks. That's 7:30 Eastern. Then we'll have the Jazz hosting Game 2 of their series with the Clippers. Countdown starts our coverage 7 o'clock Eastern here on ESPN. Oh, what a busy weekend. Let's get to this. The U.S. men's national team taking on their arch rivals Mexico in the inaugural CONCACAF Nations Final at Mile High Stadium. 27th minute off a Christian Pulisic corner. That's Gio Reyna ultimately scoring on the rebound, and the U.S. would equalize at 1-1. 108th minute, huge moment. Pulisic tackled in the box. They would review, and it is deemed a penalty. But here comes the PK try. Oh, and he buries it in the upper right-hand corner past Memo Ochoa. U.S. takes a 3-2 lead, but watch on the celebration. Scary and candidly awful moments. Fans throwing objects on the field. One in particular will hit Reyna right in the head, and down he would go, and he'd be down for several minutes before he was helped off the field. So that obviously was just awful. Now back to the action. 119th minute, Mexico off a corner. We got a deflection. This will eventually hit McKenzie's hand. They would go to VAR. They would rule that a penalty as well. And then watch the moment. Ethan Horvath is the goalie. He grew up right outside of Denver, came on this game as a sub, and makes the enormous save to preserve the win. The celebration, USA wins 3-2 after extra time, their first CONCACAF trophy since the 2017 Gold Cup. Now, I should mention, as we talked about the objects that were thrown on the field last night, that was not the only issue involving the fans. This game was briefly stopped during the final moments of the second half because of anti-gay chants from fans of the Mexican national team. Both teams pleaded with the crowd to stop using the chant, which has been used by fans at Mexico's games for years, including at a game on Friday night. We will break shortly here. We're coming back with a whole lot more. The blockbuster trade in the NFL with Julio in Tennessee. Are the Titans now the biggest threat in the AFC? We'll talk about that next.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern, Monday Night Baseball. Game 1 of a 3-game set between the National Central leading Cubs and Fernando Tatis and the Padres. You can watch it on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Then back to the huge NFL story from the weekend. Diana Russini reporting that the Falcons were on the verge of trading Julio Jones to the Titans, and then indeed they did, receiving a 2022 second-round pick and a 2023 fourth-rounder were the Falcons, and Julio Jones goes to Tennessee. And what do we think that meant? Well, after the trade for Julio, Tennessee jumps to 15-1 to win the AFC, tied for the 7th shortest odds in the conference, so they are still behind the likes of Kansas City, Baltimore, and Buffalo. I'm also being told that we have new video of Julio Jones that has just come in, and there it is. That is Julio Jones traveling in style to Tennessee, so he has arrived and will get to work. Julio Jones, again, an all-time great, the age of 32, now arriving in Tennessee, where he will form a very formidable 1-2 punch at receiver with A.J. Brown, and they've got Derrick Henry, and they've got Ryan Tannehill, and they were already good, so this could be very interesting. So it begs the question, and Teddy Bruschi, we'll start with you. We all acknowledge Kansas City's the team to beat in the AFC. As of right this minute, yes. Teddy, who's the biggest threat to them?
Guys, I'm going to say the Tennessee Titans, and here's why. Because they're not going to attempt to outscore the Chiefs like everybody else would, bringing all of these offensive weapons. What the Titans will try to do is slow the game down and beat them up. Bloody their noses, all right? They'll be the greasers, or the Chiefs will be the socias, like in the movie The Outsiders, and it's just about grinding. That's all it's going to be about. And that's how you beat them. You don't try to outscore Patrick Mahomes. You don't try to put your receivers versus Tyreek Hill and see if you can score 40. You just beat them up, slow the game down, take possessions away so your defense can rest. I think that's how the Chiefs are beat, and I think the Titans can do that.
The reference I didn't see coming, but I like it. Dominique, what's the team to beat? Or who is the biggest threat to KC, in the AFC?
Yeah, I like what Teddy's saying, but I would go the opposite way. I'm going to go with the Buffalo Bills, because we've seen the Ravens try that strategy, and we've seen the Ravens get smashed every time they played against the Chiefs. So I think one of the few teams, assuming the super freak that is Josh Allen, can continue to put up numbers that like he's put up, I think that they might have the chance to be able to score with the Chiefs and get some late game big plays and win in that situation. But it's going to be hard either way.
Okay, RC is next. Who's the biggest threat? Biggest threat to Kansas City, the AFC. Ryan, go.
Listen, I still think it's the Cleveland Browns. Like, this doesn't change it for me in Tennessee. Tennessee's not showing up with Ponyboy Curtis, or they're not showing up with Soda Pop. These are going to be the Soda Pop Curtis or Ponyboy. They're going to be, like, different when you look at what the Cleveland Browns can do. The Cleveland Browns have now added to their defense. You go out, you get Jones, you get Troy Hill, you draft Newsom in the first round. Owusu Kamara falls to you in the second round, and you already added Jadeveon Clowney to an offense that found its niche last year under Kevin Stefanski. So to me, when you look at the rosters, when you look at the team that stood on Kansas City's field and competed with Patrick Mahomes for 2.5 quarters, that's a team that believes they can beat the Kansas City Chiefs, and they have the roster to do it.
Maybe they can do it for
Stay
Johnny.
Stay gold, RC. Stay gold,
do it for
RC.
Johnny. Jeff Darlington, who's the biggest threat?
By the way, Ryan's pop culture recall is just unbelievable, out of this world. But
it is.
I'm going to say it's the Bills. I really do believe the Titans may be 2A, 2B here behind the Chiefs. But I'm going to say the Bills just because of the way that they have constructed this roster methodically over the past several years. They are primed to strike. They are ready to make that championship run. Can they compete with the Chiefs? I have no idea. But I do feel like they're maybe a year ahead of where the Titans want to be in terms of planning. I'll go with the Bills, but I absolutely do love what the Titans are doing.
When it's all said and done, though, RC, will the Chiefs stay golden? Meaning, are they still the team to beat in the AFC?
Yeah.
You didn't hear the question?
It was a question, but it's okay. I was really just trying to demonstrate that I, too, know the plot of that movie and that book.
I didn't know who you said do it. Who answered
it? It almost didn't matter. I was just trying to demonstrate that I myself can also contribute from a pop culture standpoint to this discussion so frequently. It's so infrequent that I can, that I was just delighted to jump in on that one.
Your hammer reference. Your hammer reference from last segment. That's the last for the whole week.
That was good.
It's fantastic.
Yes, I'll be dining out on that one for quite some time. In the meantime, who watched last night's event? This was the big pop culture event of the weekend, of the week, and maybe of beyond that. YouTube star turned prize fighter Logan Paul went the distance with Floyd Mayweather. They fought 8 rounds on Sunday night. It was an entertaining exhibition. No winner was officially declared. We did actually keep score at ESPN, and we scored about 78-74 in favor of Mayweather. But look, I never let something like this happen without taking advantage of the opportunity. Clearly, people want to see random people get into a ring and fight each other. So I thought I would ask the crew today, give me some people who you'd like to see fight. Teddy Bruschi, I'll start with you. Who would you like to see fight in an exhibition?
What's the equivalent of fighting, throwing a punch on the football field? It's a stiff arm. So throw Derrick Henry in there, and I'll put Aaron Donald against him. That's the type of fight I want to see right there.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron Donald against Derrick Henry. Who would win that fight? Who do you think, Teddy?
I think Aaron Donald.
I'm going Aaron Donald because he's like the Hulk out there, man. He's going to take care of that stiff arm some way or the other.
Anybody looking the other direction? I mean, the stiff arm obviously would be a lethal move in the squared circle if they were to do it. All right, I see you're shaking your head.
Aaron Donald,
what fight do you want to see?
Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald don't look scared of nothing. You know what fight I want to see? And I know people may disagree with this. I want to see Kirk Cousins and Jimmy Garoppolo. You know why? Because these are people that we think are like super sweet and super nice. And Kirk Cousins was in like some sort of choir in high school and led all these plays. Jimmy G, well, we know how Jimmy G dates, but I think that these two dudes would get absolutely gutter in the ring. I think it would be win at all costs, biting ears, pulling down pants, doing whatever you have to do to leave victorious. Because the one thing neither of them would want on the way out is for people to say, see, I knew they were soft. So I think that would be a knockdown, drag out fight to the finish. Jimmy G, Kirk Cousins, set it up on the Logan Paul, Dominique Foxworth card in October. Let's get it going.
Oh, I'm good. I can't fight. I'm Greeny and I already discussed that we're going to have a chess match as the opening to that card. We're going to start it out moving rooks around. That's our move.
Yes, I was thrown off the chess team for being too unathletic. Jeff Darlington, let me come to you. If we're going to put you on the undercard in here, who are you willing to fight?
You know, I was in New York pre-COVID, and Hembo came up to me one time in the studio, and he said, hey, who do you think would win a fight between you and Field Yates? And for some reason, I was, like, offended. like, obviously, I would win that fight. And then I remembered, I am Jeff Darlington. I don't win fights. But I do feel like while Field actually does have, like, some popcorn muscles going, I would be much more willing to cheat and strap and bite and do things that he likely would not. But look at the neck on Field Yates. I think that would make a great undercard for the Jimmy Garoppolo-Kirk Cousins fight. Certainly the least watched
Oh, my goodness. That would really be something else. Field Yates and Jeff Darlington. We are not taking odds on that under any circumstances. Guys, awesome fun this morning. Thanks, everybody, for getting up here. Don't forget, First Take is right around the corner. The crew is just minutes away. Can the Nets beat the Bucks if James Harden misses the rest of the series? Stephen A., Max, and Molly talking about that and much more. They're 5 minutes away right here on ESPN.